Hello everyone, I'm Fenyo, this is the Early Prelims podcast from the Fight Side. From this one, I have a very special guest, the second one on this podcast after I had Sandro a few weeks ago. And it's someone that you probably already know because we used to podcast together. The one and only Dan Albert is joining me today. How are you, Dan?
Just when I thought I was out, they bring me back in. And by that, I mean, yes, I am the Terry Funk of MMA fight analysis.
The Tommy Dreamer.
I only got into pro wrestling like last year, though, so my references are going to need some work. But
Terry Funk is a great reference. So
I know who Terry Funk is. It's okay. That was the fucking joke. Okay, moving on. Yeah, I'm good.
That's good. And we're here to talk about a few things. We'll begin talking about UFC 299 because it was a very big pay-per-view. And you wanted to talk about some things about this. This was headlined by a rematch between Sean O'Malley, the champion, against Chito Vera. We were expecting that to happen, but Chito Vera didn't show up to the fight, so O'Malley got to like pretty much freestyle for the whole thing. He looked very good, but and not to take credit away from him, but like of course you look good when you are fighting someone that doesn't do shit. That's my like main take from the main event. What do you think?
Okay, so my honest take on it is like so. Cheeto's always been interesting because he's kind of a pot shotter, but he has to feel his way into pot shotting a lot. But here he just, like, yeah, I don't really think he tried. Like, but every time he did, and pushed something off of it, he found success. It's just he rarely ever did because he was kind of trying to play the counter game against, you know, the guy whose, like, whole deal is fainting you out with misdirections and stuff. And it's like, with O'Malley, I think it's worth saying, like, if we haven't already, like, I don't think anyone really expected O'Malley to look this good or, like, championship, like, caliber years ago. And so kudos to him for, like, proving all of us wrong, if he did, starting at that Yan fight. But he did look really, really good. But I do think it is worth saying that Chito did flatter him a bit.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, to O'Malley's credit. But it was, like, yeah, to O'Malley's credit, he fainted a lot. And that affected, for sure, the output from Chito. You still need to be able to adjust in a title fight. Like, that's no excuse. So,
yeah, I mean, and to O'Malley's credit, though, like, actually hurting Chito for a second is, like, genuinely impressive shit.
Yeah, for sure. And also, like, this fight proved me wrong. I said, like, for a full preview, like, the fight before against Aljo, I said, like, O'Malley actually does most of his best work on the lead. And against the Aljo fight, most people were calling O'Malley, like, a counterpuncher. And then he won the title with a counterpunch, but actually, O'Malley is, like, way better, like, setting you up with his initiative. And he mostly only counters when he's leading the dance. But he's a lot more dangerous if you give him, like, the time and space to, like, get reactions out of you and set you up with layered offense.
Yeah, it's like for Chito here, like, the worst thing Chito could have done is, like, play in neutral, a reactive counterpunching game against a guy whose whole, like, modus operandi is creating initiative off of feints, misdirections, and things. Like, O'Malley is basically tied with Merab in this division for the worst guy you want to give any kind of initiative to.
Yeah, for sure. In a very different way, but that's a great point, actually. Corey is also someone that it's very bad to, like, just allowing to freestyle on you. And And we're already seeing Shito fire lose to two of those, so... but yeah, I mean, great for O'Malley. What's next for him? It seems like Dana is not very interested in the Ilya fight, because...
I would keep him far the fuck away from Ilya Topuria, just being completely honest.
Yeah, I mean, just Ilya just being such a good counterpuncher that knows actually how to walk forward and has a good jab, and also being a takedown threat. But O'Malley still presents some interesting questions as a longer guy with long-range tools that Topuria maybe lacks. We've saw Topuria struggle against Jai Herbert, who, to his credit, is a lot bigger than O'Malley and also longer. But maybe not as dangerous in open space. I think everyone wants the O'Malley versus Merab fight at this point, and I think it's very compelling.
It's very compelling. Like O'Malley versus Sandhagen's probably the most entertainment value fresh matchup you can make, but the Merab fight's the like intriguing matchup because it's between two guys who need the initiative to win, but they still have enough danger as far as their like gimmick goes that it's going to present a very interesting test for both guys, because Merab can be hurt, and no one excels at hurting you in this division right now worse than O'Malley does. But also, Merab's the drowning guy who's just going to go, 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 and not let a U-turn, my turn thing go.
And if I want to be like critical of one thing about O'Malley here is that on the broadcast, like Rogan was like giving him props for his cardio. I think O'Malley was completely setting the pace by his own, and he was still kind of tired on that fifth round when Chito finally decided to push a pace. O'Malley started looking bad, like, immediately. So that's very concerning against Merab if it goes long, because maybe it doesn't go long and O'Malley just kills him. So it's a very compelling fight. I think I agree with the majority opinion that that's the fight to make. So let's talk about the co-main event, a fight that I was very invested in because it was my guy, Dustin Poirier, and I'm not a fan of Benoit Saint-Denis, so this was the double investment in this one. And Poirier knocked him the fuck out. What do you think about this one?
Dustin fought a really stupid fight, and he fucking Labrador himboed violence him. It was awesome. Yeah, I think there's some upside for Saint Denis in this fight, because he's such a physical force that I think he'll still be around anyways, and he fought like a lot of the right fight here. It's just, you know, the thing about Dustin Poirier is if you give him like the worst, like, rule number fucking one when fighting Dustin Poirier is do not throw hands with that fucker without setting things up or having some kind of ancillary like backseat plan, like a clinch or like other tool, because otherwise he will find that moment to fuck you up. And even like a Dustin Poirier who's kind of past his best in fighting, like, not really a great like defensive fight at all, we'll get to that, he's still one of the premier scary finishers in MMA. One shot or multiple.
Yeah, I think... I mean, for all the criticism about the meme guillotine and all the shit, you can kind of say the same about Benoit Saint-Denis, who was insisting on trying to put long combinations on Poirier against the cage. He was not landing most of those shots, and he was getting countered every time, and he did not learn his lesson.
Yeah, Saint-Denis, like, the thing is that I was asking myself as the first round went on, and into the start of the second round, it kind of answered my question when Dustin hurt him. I was like, okay, so Saint-Denis here is putting on quite a pace. This is scheduled for 5. And while he's put Poirier in a lot of positions, can he keep this pace up and not get hurt in the process? He got hurt in the process once, and that's kind of where I was like, oh, okay, we're playing with those kinds of margins here. Then he better finish this fast.
Yeah, I think the approach of Saint-Denis of, like, gambling it on the first round, or like maybe he thought he was going to snowball from there. I don't think it was the wrong one. But I think if you're going to be fighting enough, like five round fights, you gotta have like plan B or be able to make some adjustments, and the guy just couldn't, like. He kept engaging in the same terms that were getting him hurt until he couldn't take it anymore. Poirier was like kind of doing the same, but I think there was a very big difference in comfort level. Like, you could tell, like, yeah, Saint-Denis was hurting Dustin, not hurting, like, rocking him, but he was piling up on damage, especially, like, in the clinch, making him work with the takedowns. But Dustin, despite getting tired, like, surprisingly early in this fight, I feel like Dustin was very confident that the longer this was going, the easier it was going to get for him, and I think he was right.
Yeah, Dustin's always had a real knack for, like, fighting well tired or gritting well tired. Because he really excels even in uncomfortable fights, even where he isn't liking it too much. Like, still picking and finding his moments. Like even against that first fight with Gaethje, like, where he was visibly hating what was happening, he was still getting worked on. Max and Hooker, like, the fights went deep, but, like, he still was, like, matching them. And in Hooker's case, like, outlasting him quite a bit.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no one really fights as good tired or, like, uncomfortable as he does. Even if it also means he fights really stupid a lot, but he's very good at fighting uncomfortable.
Yeah, I think Dustin he's in between being, like, stupid and tired, he keeps a very, like, clear mind. I think the times that he has made, like, the biggest mistakes, for example, against Khabib and Oliveira, who are, like, both, like, tremendous opposition and kind of bad matchups too, he was also failing because of the game plan that he approached the fights with. And then also, like, some tendencies, like the guillotine against Khabib and... But, for example, against Oliveira, like the no grappling rule that Mike Brown put on him, like, that was, like, a very bad idea. But, yeah, on this one, I think, the guillotines were kind of dumb. Benoit Saint-Denis was getting on top. But the grappling for Poirier looked pretty good here. He was defending the back take from Saint-Denis that has been his finishing move. And he never got close to getting a rear naked choke, like, at all. Then they got to exchanging. Saint-Denis was, like, trying very hard to hurt him, but he was not finding the right shots, and he was getting hurt in between. Like, Poirier was kind of selective with his counters, but he was landing them, like, clean.
Yeah, one thing Dustin always excels at is the moment he finds that little offbeat in the tempo, you'll see him lead with that jab, or less common in MMA, he'll lead with his straight, in this case the left. And, like, he's great at, like, that little off-key where he mixes up where he leads with either, because both of his punches hit so fucking hard anyways. Isn't his right hook is so dangerous, because that's probably his dominant hand anyways, yeah. If I recall correct.
Yeah, it is.
And so he, like, really messes with guys' rhythm, because he has such a knack for, like, finding that little slight moment in between, like, the offbeat where they're pressuring to land one of those just enough.
And also...
to, like, time something else.
Yeah, and also another thing about Poirier is that... And it's funny because many years ago I was saying, like, oh, Dustin is turning into, like, the best pocket boxer in MMA. And a particular person told me, like, that's ridiculous. Like, there's Max Holloway and there's Conor McGregor. And guess what two guys Dustin Poirier ended up outboxing in the pocket in future fights. It was both. And Dustin has, the footwork can get messy by Poirier, but... The fact that he hits so hard and he's so dexterous with both hands. And I've talked about this, like, many, many times. I talk about this with Dan Tom in the past too. And with you, I'm sure. But he has so many options from positions that people do not expect. And in this case, Benoit Saint-Denis was not getting, like, the angles on Poirier, so it was even worse. Like, when Poirier landed that straight left that hurt him, right before the guillotine and the right hook that ended up ending the fight, Dustin Poirier had, like, such a clean angle on Saint-Denis. Like, Saint-Denis did not know what he was doing inside the pocket. And yeah, I think a lot of people are giving props to Saint-Denis. I think he showed what he had already shown in the past, that he's like he has like a smart approach to maximize his attributes. He has some good skills. He's durable. He's nasty, but he doesn't have like a super coherent game.
He's not super like defensively coherent. Like. There's a lot of upside here for him still, but it's still reliant upon him having the initiative a lot. And in the upper part of the division, that's a lot harder to get. But if that's something he can work on, then I would expect him to still be around quite a bit in the future. But he's not really that guy yet.
Yeah, so. he has many bad matchups up on top. Like, yeah. Some people were saying, like, he was going to climb immediately to the top to title contention. And I just, you know, not being a hater, I just, these guys getting hurt against, like, featherweights, small guys that will never touch the top 15. And lightweight at the top, you can say, like, oh, it's full of all dudes, it's whatever you want to say. These guys are very dangerous. Like, very, very dangerous. You don't fuck around with Dustin Poirier. You don't fuck around with Justin Gaethje. You don't fuck around with Michael Chandler, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's just, like, that physical attribute will be a force for him, but it just means there's a limited cap on his ceiling at the moment. That's basically what it means.
Yeah, and defensive development. Even though he's, like, super young in his career, he already has, like, quite a few fights. I would not be, like, super hopeful about him being like, of course he's going to get better, but
he's gonna be fun still.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. He has, and I'm not saying like he's going to be in the top 15 for a long time, I feel.
Yep.
But I think top 5 territory is not something that I would say he's going to get there for sure, because we would have to see some changes in his approach. And after watching, like, many years of MMA, I know better than to trust MMA fighters to get, like, super good defensively. Especially after, like, past 10 fights. Like, even though he started fighting, like, 4 years ago, he's a lot closer to a finished product that people like to think, I think. Yeah. So, yeah, great win for Dustin. Some rumors about Dustin fighting Makhachev. I'm the biggest Dustin Poirier fan, and I'm not in favor of that fight. Like, let's be real.
I got nothing else to say on Dustin and matchup-wise. For those of you expecting comments about the guillotines, I also have nothing. make up your own fucking joke here.
Yeah, I think if you're going to give the Makhachev fight to anyone, it's gotta be the winner of Sarukian versus Oliveira. And if both guys are like super injured after that fight, I'd rather see the winner of Gaethje versus Max than Dustin, to be quite honest. Before that, we saw the debut of the great Michael Venom Page MVP against very legit top 15 fighter, UFC's Kevin Holland. And I was expecting this to, I was expecting this to be like close and ugly. And no, Michael Page beat his ass. He pushed his shit in. It was a mess of a fight. I'm not saying like it was. For me, at least, it was, like, entertaining at first, and it got kind of stale because Kevin Holland was not doing any adjustment at all. Like, he was getting shit kicked in this fight.
I am attempting to be positive, because I have been told by people that it's very good to be positive, and I'd like to think that I am very fair about things. But fuck that, this was the worst 30 minutes of my goddamn life. Okay, so let me break this down for you. Thank God I was drunk. So we start with MVP coming out to, like, the Undertaker's theme, which is already a not your fucking theme because you're not that fucking cool, buddy. Well, he's doing the, like, worst weeb poses I've ever seen in my life, because, like, you can get into that shit, whatever, but, like, stop. You can't even keep a clear stance. You don't deserve this. Yes. And so then Kevin Holland comes out, and everyone's very excited for this, and then I see that MVP is standing like he's some kind of, like, flashy skater on ice who's about to flash everyone, who knows what's happening there. Well, we look at Kevin Holland, who is a stilted deer on ice who can't even remember how to jab or kick correctly, but then every time he tries, MVP panics and stuff. So, but then Holland does nothing, so MVP just runs him into right hands and admittedly won pretty cool sweep all night, right? And otherwise, it was a complete fucking mess, and I think I got an aneurysm during it. And yet somehow, some way, none of that is actually the worst fucking part of this whole fight. The worst part of the fight was Joe Rogan turned into Teddy Atlas and was like, you know, this Kevin Holland guy kind of brings me back to old Tommy Hearns, you know? And then you just want to fucking die and burn the whole thing down because it's over, man. It's just, it's over. That's all I got.
So, yeah, I mean, MVP is in the UFC now, and now he's ranked. So, who saw that coming? Like,
yeah, great work, Kevin Holland. You fucking hack. Called yourself.
Thank you, Kevin Holland.
His name is Trailblazer. If it was it should actually be Trailblazing for Mediocrity, because that's what we've caused now, because holy shit.
But thankfully, before that welterweight fight, we had an actual good welterweight fight between Jack Della Maddalena and Gilbert Burns. When this fight was announced, I told you guys Jack Della was going to hurt him. You were saying, no, Jack Della is mid, Jack Della can't wrestle, Jack Della can't grapple. Well, who see who's laughing now? But no, it was a very cool fight.
I, on the other hand, had not watched enough Jack Della and still haven't, so I would take some things I say here with a grain of salt, but this fight was really fun.
It was very fun, like,
yeah, because, like, Burns is kind of pretty underrated, I feel, because he's, like, low-key a super cool litmus test for a lot of, like, fighters, even though he's, like, 37, but Burns is a fast starter. He gives a lot of pretty decent maximization of his looks a lot. Like, one really cool thing Burns did was, like, he was like, oh, okay, you're going to come in, I'm going to try to time you with the right hand, but sometimes I'll double up with it in order to set up, like, a triple threat off of the takedowns as well. So now you have to work for that. But then, and Della Maddalena kind of picks up on that and goes, oh, okay, so you're going to throw at me a lot as soon as I come in. What if I make the exchange longer? And one cool thing JDM does a lot is in exchanges, like, he's constantly, like, forcing the other guy to reset to, like, set up into one certain shot that he really wants. Like, sometimes he'll back Burns up with a couple of jabs, maybe a hook to make him go towards the power hand, and then he hits with a shovel hook to the body. And, yeah, just a very, very fun little crafty technical fight between these two guys.
Yeah, Burns is fun because he has, like, a very minimal tool set, but he does a lot with the few tools that he has. And I thought the takedown game for Burns looked very coherent this time around. So it was, like, a very, like, dangerous test for Maddalena, who Jack, for his credit, showed tremendous scrambling ability here. Aided by part because of his size and his athleticism, I think Burns has had trouble grappling some guys at welterweight in the past. He put Jack Della in some sketchy positions, but he was always, like, scrambling very well. And then on the third round, he was getting going, and then it's like the limitations of the minimal toolset of Burns on the feet start to show its cracks. Maddalena is just extending combinations, switching stances, going to the body a lot, the classic stuff. And then Burns got like the last takedown that could maybe like allow him to like rob the fight or get a submission. Madalena Grandby is like pushing off the cage and times a beautiful knee when Burns is going for the takedown, and that was the end of it. I mean, should have been the end of it, but Dan Miragliotta blessed us with one of his like super early stoppages. He allowed Gilbert Burns to be knocked out like 3 times. It was gross.
Yeah, I think I think to distract from that, like going back to a couple of things, like it is concerning for like Della Maddalena that he got into so many dangerous positions anyways. But to his credit, he did escape all of them, and every time he did, like, he constantly did try to hit Burns on the break to try to get at least one thing going back. So that kind of, like, kept giving him ideas as far as, okay, when Burns shoots, I can time that kind of stuff. So it's a match that, like, really, I think, showed JDM kind of being a little better than I thought he was as far as getting out of dangerous stuff, but it really shows how dangerous of a fighter he is, too, and how much he's paying attention to his tools. Because, like, his footwork, I think, is a bit of a mixed bag, because in many ways, I think his cage craft is excellent as far as, like, his shot selection, timing guys, putting them where he wants them. His shifts kind of hide the fact that he's crossing his feet and open for a lot of counters.
Yeah.
Or, like, reverse shots a lot. But he makes things work because he's always trying to punish the other guy's positioning first. So Burns is like a very dangerous guy on the ground just naturally. So him surviving there bodes well for him against like dangerous finishers, but it doesn't mean he's going to pass like every test he runs into. But there's a lot of upside here, even if there's a lot of risks that are showing.
Yeah, at the top of the division right now, there's like 2 guys that are maybe more dangerous than Burns on the ground. And those would be Brady and Rachmanov. And Brady is like a similar challenge to Burns, but a lot less dangerous on the feet, with better wrestling though. And Rachmanov is like the final boss to anyone that shows like a weakness to grappling, pretty much.
Yep.
So and Jack Della, for his credit, he was calling out Rachmanov. I wish I could pick him, but I think I gotta side with Shavkat on that one. But yeah, it would be a tremendous fight on the feet.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, I mean it might be too early for that fight though, just given like welterweight status personally. But honestly, who wouldn't want to see it?
Yeah, it would be fantastic. Unless like Rachmanov gets him to the ground and submits him immediately, but I would still
shut the fuck up, Fenyo.
I would still be curious to see that. Like, I would be very impressed. Yeah. Impressed. That fight was very good, and the one prior to that one was excellent as well. And we were both like looking forward to this one big time, I feel, and we were both hoping to see Piotr Jan like return to form, especially after getting thrashed by the MMA Twitter community, and something that I don't think it was like super justified. I mean, I know some of you guys are memeing, but some people like lose sight of the joke and were like actually saying like, oh, Piotr Jan was always bad. And no, he was never bad, actually.
I mean, the thing is like, I am known as a Piotr Jan guy probably, because, I mean, I've written a lot about him, I enjoy studying him, and I'm not going to hide the bias I have for him, but I'm also not going to deny that I haven't been wrong about him before, because I definitely have. But everyone's saying that, like, oh, this guy got lucky to get to the top. Absolutely fucking not, because if you watch that first Aljo fight and those Sandhagen fights again, you do not do as well as he looked in those fights without being a very fucking good fighter.
And O'Malley fight, too.
And the O'Malley fight. Like even in Aljo 2, it's like, here's a controversial statement that's probably disagreeable. Like, he didn't win that fight, let's be real, but you could make it a draw. You could. He didn't win, but he did adjust to make it close by the end for Aljo to have to work for it.
Stelling was looking like terrible in the last two rounds. He was like trying to avoid the fight at all costs.
There's a lot of things you can criticize about that performance that didn't look good for Jan either, but like he still finished that fight strong enough that you can make an argument. Yeah. And for a draw. Not a victory, fair. A draw. O'Malley, I mean, everyone's going to argue about the scorecards all day. I thought he won, but O'Malley gave him hell. But he still gave hell back and more. That was a great fucking fight, and he looked good in that fight, too.
And it was a fight that was complicated, like, attribute-wise, just because O'Malley is so long and has, like, a style that it's complicated to Jan. People didn't want to admit that. But now, looking back, it's, like, very easy to see how O'Malley, with all the feints, being very long, being capable of moving on the outside.
Being an excellent guard breaker, too. O'Malley, and being willing to play, like, Piotr's hand fight game. Like, I made a thread about this.
Yeah, it was very interesting. And we saw that because Song Yadong, for as good of a puncher that he is, he had a lot of trouble getting to Jan cleanly because of his guard. I think it was Ryan who posted how Pierre Jan was like using his like framing and hiding behind the shoulder to block a lot of the right hands from Song.
So I think a good place to start with this is kind of asking ourselves what kind of things Song posed to Jan. Because I think that's an important thing. So what is Song Yadong really pose in this division as far as threats goes? Well, this guy is uber durable. He's ridiculously athletic. He's only going to be able to be moved back by a guy who is equally a cheat code athletic freak like Cheeto. Oh. And even then, that fight is like one of the greatest car collisions of the last like 5 years because they like beat the living shit out of each other.
It was so violent.
Yeah, and like... It's a great fight, too, because after round two, Song just has his look on his face, like, what the fuck just happened? And, but the thing is, when this fight was made, my immediate thought was, okay, Jan has genuinely fought some guys before that I don't think he can back up that easily, and Song's probably going to be one of those guys. And if you go back a few fights for Jan, he ran into Jinsu Son, this uber-durable guy, who didn't have, like, the striking acumen or, like, physical threats that Yadong posed here.
It was insanely durable.
Yeah, but just had bullshit durability and refused to take a step back. So Jan had to play more of, like, a neutral game against him. And in some ways, he kind of ran into that again here. But there's a couple of, like, upsides that happened here. And I think, like, at first, like, Song couldn't really break through Jan's, like, hand fight, like, guard routine. But then he figured out, like, some shots to make with the wrestling chains. And then Jan, just from round two on, figured out, like, how to shut those things down. And then, like, started jabbing his face off. And the jab is the big thing for Jan in this fight. Because for years, if you've watched Piotr Jan, he periodically jabs, but he's not really had an active one. And he is a guy who would benefit a lot from it. And here was a prime example of why. Because... it converts really well to the frames and, like, guard, long guards he likes to use that Ryan pointed out. But the jab is, like, excellent at building, like, reads for, like, level changes, transitional work, and the offensive work that he favors so much. And so, like, he just constantly started chaining and tooling Song with it. Because Song, for however dangerous he is not good at dealing with rhythm manipulations.
Yeah, for sure.
And doesn't have the cage craft to really, like, cut you off with it. And so, when Jan pulled this out, like, it was a serious positive, I'd say, for his game. As far as showing, like, some depth and, like, potential growth, if it becomes a consistent facet. And, like, he just did a lot of slick stuff with it that strikers who use jabs should do. And that's kind of just the gist of it.
Yeah, it was great. Jan was using a lot of... he was jabbing. Sometimes, like... he knew he was jabbing out of range, and just because he wanted to adjust his feet. And then when Song was trying to come out with the counters, Jan was already having an angle on him, and he was making him miss so much when the jab started going. So yeah, there was a lot of instances of Jan using the long guard to block, but there was also a lot of moments where Jan was like how Rohan loves to say sliding just out of range, but it was true. But it was not just because of distance management, but it was because the footwork. Like Jan was making a very good job of taking slight pivots with his jab, hiding sidesteps with the jab, and were all those things that for Song that is so minded to exchange, is such a tactics-oriented fighter, he was losing sight of the footwork of Yan because he was like, okay, this guy's planted, I gotta throw my combination, but
It's not a your turn, my turn kind of thing,
yeah.
basically.
But he was like, Song was counting on Yan being there after the jabs, like, okay, it's my turn now, but it was not really his turn because Yan was not there to be hit. And then
Yep.
he mixed the takedowns to get back at him, and he looked fantastic wrestling, to be honest.
Yeah, like I think the big question for many people is like it if this becomes a staple of Jan's game, does he get back to the top? I think Merab is still just going to be that natural problem for him, but Merab's kind of his own unique force of nature. But I would happily love between seeing improvements Corey has made, see a rematch between them down the road. I think it would be tremendous again, and I would love to see him versus O'Malley over 5 because it would still be awesome.
Yeah, for sure.
But like. I think this was a good reminder to people that this guy was elite for a reason, and only elite fighters are going to beat this guy.
Yeah, people were starting to think that some guys outside the top 15 were going to beat Jan, and it's like, no.
No, like Aljamain Sterling, like the most impressive thing Aljo ever did was figure out like how to maximize a back take to stall Jan down. And to like make it messy enough that Jan couldn't get easy things done without transitional work. But Aljo had to work hard for those things, far harder than he usually does. Merab just never fucking let him rest. And you can go like, Merab like Merabbed him because he's gonna do that to everyone just naturally if he gets his game. But like, if you watch that fight, pay attention to how much Jan defends because it's still outrageous
Yeah.
even then.
Yeah, for sure.
And I mean, O'Malley was a straight up firefight. So, I mean, it's like, I don't know kind of where Bantamweight's gonna go, but I think, like, the thing with Bantamweight is you can never really say, like, some guy's completely done yet, because it's such a stylistically deterministic division, and that's what makes it the best.
So what's next for Yan? The rumors are that Corey is going to fight Usman Nurmagomedov. So,
I thought it was Umar.
oh
Is it
yeah,
Umar?
Usman is his brother. Yeah, it's Umar.
Oh Jesus. Okay, family trees. Okay.
So yeah, the rumor is that Corey is fighting Umar. So I think the UFC is probably going to do like something very stupid and put Pyoryan against the winner of Figueiredo versus Cody Garbrandt, to be honest.
Awesome. Awesome. Oh, I keep forgetting that fight's gonna happen,
Yeah,
and I
it's
cannot
going to be
wait.
so silly.
It's going to be the best thing I've seen in my life.
And for Song, I would be like fun to see him like against like Jonathan Martinez. That would be like a fun fight because like Song look all right against a fellow kicker in his teammate Gutierrez. But Gutierrez was starting to figure out the kicking distance, was starting to outkick Song, and then Song just mixed the takedowns and the fight was fucked for Gutierrez. So
I think.
Martinez, that is a better defender of takedowns and more aggressive, could be interesting.
Yeah, I don't really know where Bantamweight's gonna go from here with everything, but like, I don't really mind because you can't really miss with intrigue as far as this division goes.
Or maybe like Song can fight like Mario Bautista too. That would be fire as well.
Oh, I was gonna say Bautista. God, yeah, that would be
Yeah, that
awesome.
would be great. Yeah, actually
Actually,
make
on
that
the
one.
top, on the topic of Jan fighting someone, it's possible if Cejudo's staying around, they'll probably book that or
Oh
Chito.
yeah, Cejudo or Chito? Yeah.
One thing I will say is, and I think I said this too, I would not be surprised to see a very, very similar kind of physical problem that song post a yawn here that Cejudo and Cheetah would do. So I would not be surprised to see some similar things.
Yeah, I think people are counting Cheeto out, but I think he still has, like...
Yeah, Cheeto can pose some issues to Yan in that fight, for sure, and so can Cejudo.
On the other hand, after seeing, like, Cejudo's form against Merab, I would pick...
Who knows?
I would pick Yan, like, very comfortably against Cejudo, to be honest.
I would too, yeah. I just know Cejudo is so explosive, you can't really count him out too much, but who knows?
We have to stop talking about good fights because the feature prelim was Curtis Blades against Jailton Almeida. And this was like...
Do you want...
I know you hate the term like fraud checking, but... but the... And you can actually... Like, we know the heavyweight division is a fraud already, but this was a fraud checking.
This is one of the greatest two-way disasters I've seen in my entire life. It was
amazing. Like everyone got to look like shit on here.
Do you want to take this from the top or do you want me to? Because I don't know where to
go
start.
Go ahead and enjoy it.
Oh my god. Okay, so basically, I'm just gonna. It starts with Blades and Almeida coming together. And Blades immediately has this look like, what is lateral footwork? And then Almeida shoots. And the thing about Almeida's shot is it's like the most identifiable shot ever, but Blades is okay with it, so they tie up. And Blades then has this like perpetually confused look on his face for the next like 5 minutes.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure like going into a fight, Blades was like, I'm a wrestler, I'm going to sprawl this skinny kid. And Almeida put on a little bit of weight, and he looked fucking huge here. And he closed the distance, clasped his hands just like he does against everyone else, and takes Curtis Blades, who was like a decently high-level wrestler in college. And he took him for a ride like 7 times. And Blades was looking at his corner like, what the fuck is going on here?
It's awesome. Blade just looks perpetually confused and
he
mad.
Looks so perplexed, like.
and meanwhile you just see Almeida doing the same thing, which is just like trying to trap the same foot, and Blade just like ponders, okay, what am I gonna do at this point? Oh god, here we go again. And then it gets funnier because then the ending happens. And where they, like, Almeida shoots the shot, and he's just holding Blades is up against the fence, and Blades is just like, fuck it, I'm just gonna hit him. And then it works.
Yeah, Curtis, like, actually sprawls this time, and Almeida, who is known for shooting, looking, like, straight down, Blades just, like, puts his chest on his head and slams him down, and then just starts, like, punching the side of his head until he was dead, like...
And then, to top it all off, Blades just walks out, and he has that, like, huffing proud toddler walk and expression, and you can see, and he just looks like he's, like, that kid who's just, like, just won this game, but he's, like, 4 years old and doesn't really understand, and it's like, I did it, Dad. It's just... But the dad has left because it's massively disappointing.
The dad left when he saw him getting out-wrestled by a Brazilian light heavyweight on round one.
I can't hate it. It was just the funniest thing all night. And thank God I was drunk because it made it way better.
Yeah, good for Curtis Blades. And now Blades is saying...
Or bad, depending upon how you look at this. But good for all of us.
And now Blades is saying that he's not fighting Gunn because Gunn refused to fight him. So.
Great. I respect that level of pettiness.
Yeah, you gotta respect it. Macy Barber fought Caitlin Serminara, who's that, formerly known as Shukagian. Barber keeps being like a monster athlete, so...
I did not watch this. My only question is, how many kias did we hear?
I think less than you would expect, but still a fair amount.
Okay. I'm only going off of hearsay because I don't remember the last time I watched Chukagian fight, and I don't even remember.
Before that, we have something more meaningful. Mateusz Gamrot fought Rafael Dos Anjos, and Dos Anjos, as everyone does, almost killed Gamrot, only to get, like, low single immediately after.
You know, there's a part of me that goes, like, respects the hell out of Gamrot for having, like, serious heart and, like, being a pretty good chain wrestler. And, like, his recovery is, like, legit good.
Yeah.
But, oh my god, is he frustrating. Because it's, like, he doesn't have the, like, ancillary, like, ability or exchange ability to make all those level change matter. But when he, like, gets to the chain wrestling, like, he looks great. But, yeah, it's such a, he's such a weird fighter. Because, like, he gets out-damaged in most of these fights, but he's winning because... who knows? Question mark, question mark, question mark. I didn't score this. I don't remember too much of it, to be honest.
No, I think it's fair to score the last two for Gamrot. Dos Anjos, like, very low on volume and getting wrestled, doing stupid shit, like just, like, squaring his hips for big left hands. Like, when you know you can do that, so...
yeah. I mean... The thing is, like, RDA, like, RDA, how old is RDA now? Is he 40 yet?
He's 38, I think.
Yeah. It's still crazy that RDA is still, like, decently good enough to be giving, like, tests to, like, top 15 guys at lately. It really shows just how special a fighter he was.
Yeah, but, you, like, put him against, like, low-level top 15, guys outside the top 15, and he's going to beat the shit out of them, like, to be honest.
Yeah. Yeah, because he's one of the most, like... well-versed, experienced MMA fighters to ever live and is never going to get the credit he really deserves for it. But, like, yeah, he's still 38 years old.
39, actually, so yeah.
Oh, 39. Goodness gracious. Yeah, I only have one last thing to say about Gamrot's victory, which is, however he's winning, I would like to congratulate him for getting into contendership via his... only fan subscription, and I have the name of said fan right here. It is Ryan Wagner. Congratulations, Gamrot.
I don't know who that guy is, but yeah, congratulations for being the only Gamrot fan.
Congratulations, we're very proud of you.
Kyler Phillips fought Pedro Munhoz, and Pedro Munhoz looked very old. Kyler Phillips looked pretty good, I'm not gonna hate. But I thought it was very noticeable that Pedro Munhoz doesn't want to exchange anymore, and he was very reliant on exchanging to win fights when he was good. So this is like the end of Pedro Munhoz being like a somewhat elite fighter, I think.
I didn't watch this one, but I think he's kind of been on the down low for a little bit now, because, like, he's not as physical as he used to be. He's definitely not as fast, so... It's not too much of a surprise, but, like, if you stay, like, with Munhoz in his ranges, like, he's still pretty decent. But, yeah, he's kind of just been since Aldo beat the shit out of him, I guess, like, a few years ago.
Yeah.
Like, he's just not really that guy anymore. He's not really, like, certifiably kind of elite.
He tried to find, like, a second gear against Chito in their last fight, but... and he did...
It's just not there.
He did fought a very good second round, but then Chito, like, fought back a bit harder, and Munhoz got, like, shy, like, okay, this guy's hitting me hard. I've always had, like, a great chin, but I'm not liking getting hit here, like... Felipe Lins and Iwan Kutelava had... a fight that was not ridiculous for some reason. Like, both guys look pretty decent, so that's no fun, because that's not what we want from light heavyweights. Michel Pereira fought Michal Oleksiychuk, and of course, like, Michal is the only, like, body puncher in the division, and Michel Pereira just nails him with a huge punch to the gut. And submits him with a rear naked choke, because middleweight is the stupidest of all divisions.
Amazing.
Yeah, middleweight is the gift that keeps on giving, so... Rovellis the Spain did what he always does. He throws a high kick because he's like a taekwondo medalist, and then just killed Josh Parisian walking backwards with the loopiest, ugliest punch you ever seen. So I'm all for the Spain adding even more silliness to the heavyweight division. He's like 6'9", throws high kicks, and throws the ugliest punches you ever seen, so that's great. Asu Almabayev fought CA Vergara in a pretty good fight. Almabayev is like an exciting wrestler. I mean, I did a video breakdown about the wrestling of Almabayev in this fight. The full video you can find on Patreon. And I put a preview on Twitter and it got like completely buried, got no engagement because I think Twitter actually hates when you put like Patreon links under your post. So I'll try to not put that the next time. And the opener saw Joanne Wood, formerly Joanne Calderwood, a win against Marina Moroz, avenging her loss from 5 years ago or 7 years ago, I don't know. But it was cool to see JoJo like landing a spinning backfist on her last round of her career. I was always a big fan. And that was the event. Let's talk some shit about this week's event before ending the podcast, because this next event is so bad. But the main event should be funny. We have Tuivasa versus Taibura on the main event. What are your thoughts, Dan?
Okay, so as everybody knows, I am an enormous Marcin Tybura fan. And by everybody, I mean, who knows, maybe some of you. So Marcin Tybura, he's not good, but he tries. He's also, like, the jankiest of the jank at heavyweight. He's got a decent jab. He's got a really weird high guard that, like, he'll shift between, like, back and forth with upper body feints and stuff. He'll throw out an occasional kick and, like, try to set up straight shots. Who knows what he's doing with the level change behind the high guard, because he keeps his hands close to his head like he's on the verge of crying or, like, surprising a baby sometimes. I don't know. He has horrible defense on the way in if he tries to blitz forward. But the funniest thing of all about Tybura is that he always forgets he can wrestle. And so whenever he's fighting like these blood and guts wars with uber durable heavyweights who have no takedown defense, he ends up getting the shit beat out of him sometimes. And then he'll suddenly like, I'm going to take you down, and it works.
He actually has a very good top game for heavyweight as well.
Yeah. And so that's the Tybura playbook. His fights are actually kind of fun, but they're like the slop kind of jank fun that you find at like kind of an endearing junk food store sometimes.
Yeah, it is like a very shitty hamburger from a gas station that is surprisingly good. But you still feel like kind of like crap after eating it. That's Marcin Tybura.
But you can tell like put enough effort into the like flavoring where it's like, you know what?
This meat is clearly fake as shit, but the sauce is pretty good.
Yeah. So that's Marcin Tybura. And if you want any recommendations, I especially recommend the Ben Rothwell fight, because it is the most funny, bizarro world jank fight of all time, and it's great. And also because Ben Rothwell turned into a K-1 fighter at one point, it's hilarious.
Yeah, it's so funny. And also, this is like a bad main event, but also not, because...
Yeah. It's the slop kind... It's, again, the sloppy kind of fun, because, like, then we have Tuivasa, who is... This may not be fair, because you might be more familiar with him than I am, but I've always thought that he's, like, an extremely budget Mark Hunt.
Yeah, pretty much. Doesn't have, like, the nuanced counter game from Mark Hunt. But he still, like, can throw a big left hook, has a huge right hand, has leg kicks, very agile despite being shaped like a refrigerator. So, and Tsubasa, it's usually fun, to be honest. Like, either if he's getting his ass kicked or he's like knocking out Greg Hardy. Thank you so much for that one. Yep. He's fun to watch. So, this.
So weirdly, it's a fight between a guy who throws a lot versus a guy who throws really hard, which by heavyweight standards means it's going to be at least fun.
Yeah, at least these guys are not going to be, like, shy about fighting. And that's what usually happens at heavyweight. And both these guys are not scared at all about getting into a fist fight. So at least we do have that.
Yeah, so it's probably going to be, like, again, it's not going to be the best, like, burger you've had, and it's very unhealthy, but you know what? Better than what you usually get.
Yeah.
At heavyweight.
If you go to the heavyweight gas station, the rest of the burgers are, like, a lot worse, usually.
And speaking of the rest of the burger, the rest of this fucking card.
So, first, I mean, this fight is not bad, but this is not a co-main event. We have Brian Battle, like, against Ange Lusa. Lusa, to his credit, looked pretty good in his last two fights against AJ Fletcher and Rhys McKee. He's, like, well-rounded. And if you haven't watched Ange Lusa fight against Jack Della Maddalena in Contender Series, go watch it because it's fucking insane. It's a fucking insane fight. And Brian Battle, who I think won the Ultimate Fighter, he's, like, good, but very uninteresting to me. Like, he's just, like, good. Like, there's not much to say about Brian Battle. He's, like, alright. If you try to wrestle him, he's probably, like, if you try to be, like, a bad wrestler against him, he's going to take top position and he's going to win like that. If you stay at range, he can kick. If you close the distance, he doesn't have, like, pocket boxing, but he can throw punches very hard, so. So, yeah, he's okay. This fight, I don't have any problem with this fight, but this should not be a co-main event. Especially when the main event is already, like, meme. Before that, we have Kennedy and Sejuku against Ovin St. Preux. St. Preux is 40 years old, man. And Sejuku is only 31, but he might be 40 as well. This is just a slop city. And not the fun kind, like the main event. Like, all St. Preux is, like, very low output. Sejuku, who knows? Maybe he tries to wrestle. I don't know.
I think we're forgetting the most obvious thing here. What if...
Von Flew.
Hear me out on this. No, not the Von Flew. I thought of something better, okay. Even funnier. What if we get another skateboard?
Okay, that's good.
We repeat the Shogun incident.
Poor Shogun got hit with a skateboard.
Actually, that wasn't Shogun. That was the ghost of the ghost of Shogun.
But then the ghost of the ghost of the ghost of the ghost of Shogun proved that the skateboard incident was real because he had a very close fight with Ovin St. Preux.
Oh, God, you're right. I forgot. Oh, my God. This division sucks.
Christian Rodriguez, who looked great, derailing Raul Rosas Jr. and beating Cameron Simon, was forced to move to featherweight because he was unable to make 135. He's fighting Isaac Dulgarian, who has a wrestling background, a high-level one, I think. And he also looked pretty good, so that should be a good fight. Like, low-key, one of the best ones here. What else? Pani Kiansat and Macy Chiasson are rematching. I know for a fact that I saw the first fight, and I don't remember a single second of it. Like, I don't remember anything. I barely know how Pani Kiansat looks. I'm not trying to be mean or anything. It's just like, it's so weird to make rematches instead of new fights. Unless it is like for a title or the first fight was great. But then you make a rematch of a fight that was like mid. And it's so strange, man. This one, I think you will have some thoughts about. Gerald Meerschaert is fighting Brian Barbarina at middleweight.
Does Brian Barbarina still have a chin?
I think, but by a middleweight, he's like super small and he looks like
oh,
shit.
It's at middleweight. Crap. And I don't really remember how Gerald Meerschaert fights. I don't know.
Both are southpaws, so this is probably going to be sloppy.
Oh,
so.
God. Oh, good. Okay.
Mike Davis is fighting Nathan Levi. Like, it's okay, but...
Oh, wait, didn't Mike Davis have that really awesome fight with that Mason Jones maniac, like, a few years ago?
Yeah, that fight was great. So, I'm excited. And Mike Davis also won a fight against Borshov. Wrestling
cool.
him, so yeah, Mike Davis is kind of interesting, and Levi is from supposedly for it here it says like he's from a country, but I don't think that's a country, but we'll.
You don't think that's a country?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Josiane Nunez is fighting Chelsea Chandler, and like yeah, I'm running out of stuff to say. Ollie Osborne is fighting Jafel Filho, and this might be like.
Wait, I remember Josiane Nunez. She has no footwork, and that's all I have.
He's a southpaw that it's like 5'1" at bantamweight, but he throws insanely hard.
Great.
Ollie Osborne versus Jafel Filho. These are good fighters, but I don't think this makes for a good fight. Actually, no. Ollie Osborne, I always get surprised when he can actually wrestle a little bit. And I always think, like, he cannot wrestle at all, but he actually can. Filho is, like, not great on the feet, but throws very heavy, and it's a great wrestler. So, I mean, grappler, so could be fun. Thiago Moises is fighting some guy named Mitch Ramirez. No idea who that is. Josh Koulibaly, he's fun. He's fighting some guy named Danny Silva who is coming from Contender Series. Don't remember. Corey McKenna versus Jacqueline Amorim at 115. That's semi-interesting. And the opener has Chad Angeliger, who looked very good in his debut against Jesse Strader. I became a fan immediately, and then he looked like crap in his last two fights. And he's fighting some guy named Charlampos Grigoriou from Cyprus.
Who is known as the Ferocious.
The Ferocious, yeah.
Great.
And he also
I love MMA nicknames. They're very fun.
Yeah, the Monster versus the Ferocious. That's all you need to know. And yeah, this one is like dire. Like most of these fights...
Wait. Did you see what the nickname is for Thiago Moises' opponent, the guy you don't know anything about?
El Puma.
Mitch Ramirez guy.
No, yeah.
It's the Fight Stalker.
The Fight Stalker.
What the fuck does that mean?
I don't know. I think he used to be like an MMA fan, and he was stalking fighters to their houses.
That's disturbing. I don't want to root for him. Hopefully he loses.
No, I don't know. I was just making shit up. This is dire. Like, I sometimes say, like, okay, this has, like, low-key some good fights. These fights are not terrible, but you cannot carry an event with these fights. Like, this might be it. Like, a new low standard for Apex cards. At least put some meme fights. I know you have the meme main event, but you need more memes. Like, make the whole...
That's true.
Make the whole card memes at that point.
That's true. Or add, and this is a great segue, we need to add, like, more, like, interesting gimmicks to these fights, you know? Like, make the cages smaller or, like, gradually change sizes or dimensions. Or do what PFL did and put stage hazards in their cage.
All right, because we did not talk about Glassgate.
Oh my gosh, the best thing that has ever happened. Many people have asked me, what has happened in this fight? And I'm going to leave the technical reads to Fenio because I don't remember what the fuck happened.
Okay, so
besides the glass.
So PFL Europe had a very high-profile fight in France between two French prospects. We had Dubé, who comes from a kickboxing background, and he was fighting Baki, who is a very high-level grappler. So it was insane, and there was like an enormous amount of hype behind this fight. So the fight begins, and Baki gets some takedowns on round one. Doombe actually very good at defending takedowns, surprisingly, and actually like using his grappling from the ground to get back up using the butterfly hooks and shit. So round two, Doombe gets going with the jab. Baki doesn't quite fight the entries, so they are 1-1 going into round three. And then Doombe starts complaining to the ref. Something is wrong with my feet, with my foot. And the ref is Mark Goddard, by the way. He gets very mad, as Goddard does, and he's like, you gotta fight. And he's like, but my foot. No, you gotta fight. So they're staring at each other. Baki is like, look at his foot. And Goddard looks at Doombe and he's like, what's wrong with your foot? Can you look at my foot? And he's like, okay, this fight is over. And then it turns out that he had like a splinter of glass in his big toe.
So here's what happened, everybody. The real explanation for what's going on here. We have one of two interpretations. First of all, many of you may have played fighting games growing up. What you may not have realized is that there are arena hazards, and this is meant to deal more damage to your opponent because you knock them into things. And so sometimes, however, it's to also build meter for effectiveness. So here's the thing, though. When Baki was pointing at it, he was performing a taunt to build meter. Now, Mark Goddard wasn't in on... Mark Goddard is obviously one of those fucking boomers who's never played a fighting game in his life. And if he did, he'd be a fucking zoner, which is kind of supportable, but it's the sort that you sort of hate because they're the total strict kind of, like, genre. So anyways, is Mark Goddard wasn't in on this whole scheme that PFL is, like, changing the metagame for. So the fight was called. That's explanation one. Explanation two is we're finally making MMA the fucking pro wrestling sport that everyone, those idiot reporters, has wanted for years. Which I also support. Because think about it, guys. If we start adding more glass around the arena for guys to step in, we can finally fix everyone's fucking cage craft.
So what you're saying is that we're just like destroy glass and put it all over the floor so people learn footwork?
Yeah, listen. If we can have psychology in matches such as Shawn Michaels versus Mankind, where the whole plan is to avoid the mandible claw technique, we gotta, like, mix it up with MMA.
Okay, and start teaching, like... But what if we throw, like, those very big barrels from Street Fighter 2 as well? Especially during heavyweight fights.
Wait. What if we also, like, start throwing in those random, like, Smash Bros. Power-up items?
I'm so tired that the MMA competitive scene is, like, no items, octagon only, when there's so many stages, and the items also require a skill.
There's no fucking item buffs in these goddamn EA games, and so it's like, everyone's like, these games are fun, but if you played an actual fucking fighting game, and like a pretentious game elitist like me, you would understand that you're just playing like leftover chowder that your mom threw in the trash bin. And we need some actual fucking stage hazards, people. Light a part of the arena on fire, make the ref have to deduct, like, random points or make up new rules as it goes. Make countouts everywhere. Make it more interesting. PFL's changing the game with glass. It's just Goddard's a fucking moron, so the whole plan was ruined.
So, yeah, PFL, as always, one step ahead of the UFC.
That's true. By the way, is PFL buying Bellator, or is it the other way around, or am I crazy?
PFL already bought Bellator.
Oh, all the more reason they fucking suck, then.
So yeah, you buy Bellator, you become Bellator.
That's the rule.
I don't know who said that, but there's no one in the history of mankind that has said anything that's more true than that. So we'll leave it at that. Before leaving, guys, if you want to support the Fight Side, you can always go to our Patreon. We have exclusive content all weeks, and you can get access to our Discord server. Make sure to follow my friend Dan on Twitter. He's always posting cool shit. Mostly combat sports, including like old school boxing. He knows a ton about that. And also hot takes on video games that you might like. So,
Not really hot takes. I just play things people don't. It's not really important.
So yeah,
I just say what.
Make sure to follow him.
And I'm an alcoholic again, which is leading to some posts that are, let's just say, nobody knows what the fuck I'm talking about.
No, he's just becoming an alcoholic again, so get on the train right now. Follow him at typewritingDA on Twitter. And yeah, that's the podcast. If you want to promote anything, this is your chance.
I am currently working on a project. The first part of it will probably be released soon. I am working on a passion project I've wanted to do for years, which is called the Top 100 Favorite Boxing Matches. I watch a shit ton of footage, and I like collecting or watching footage of great fights. And since we're all kind of in it to watch and appreciate great contests and talk about why they're great, I figured I would share just my personal list, but also hopefully introduce you all to a lot of things you may not have known before, maybe give you perspective on some things, and hey, you maybe get some new experiences out of it. So it's going to be long, obviously, it's going to be biased, and it's going to be hopefully okay. And who knows when part one's coming out, hopefully within a week.
That's great. I'm very looking forward to it. I like boxing. I have watched a fair share of classics, but not as much as I should, so I'll make sure to watch every fight that you put on that list for sure, because there will be a lot that I haven't watched. So I'm very excited about that. When it comes to me, I'll be releasing some videos, and also on Twitter, always you can count on me on making a thread about something obscure about MMA, like look at this guy jabbing this guy in WEC 10 years ago. Who knows? I mean, WC was around more than 10 years ago, but, you know, you guys might drift. This was the Early Brief Podcast. I'm Fenyo. This was Dan. Thank you so much for joining me.
Yep.
And that's it. Bye, guys.
Bye.